CliffCentral.com. All right, let's get cracking. It's Thursday. These weeks are moving, man. Da, 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 da. Didn't you say the other day it's 8 Mondays to Christmas?
Yes, we're still in the same week.
Yes.
I'm trying to do the official countdown.
See, you weren't here yesterday. Joe Camino was in, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's got me so terrified of spending any money. I was walking around. You know, like they say that the Queen of England switches off all the lights around the palace. She actually walks around just switching.
Really?
Yeah, she's really, like, careful about not wasting money. I was walking around my house just checking what shit I could switch off.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. I was thinking, who can I leave off the Christmas list this year? I mean, Joe put the fear of God into me yesterday. And then I got this very funny voice note from Gord. He's like, you know, the thing about money is you got to save as much money as you can. It's hilarious.
You should have said that yesterday in the show.
Yeah, I know. I think he was a little intimidated. Yeah, Joe can be pretty scary.
Joe is Joe.
That's the best way to explain it. There's a reason we get him in here, and there's a reason people like him, even though they're terrified of him, is that he's not speaking anything but the truth.
Yeah.
And people don't want to hear that stuff that Joe's busy vomiting up the whole time, because it is scary to think about your financial future and just how irresponsible you are and credit card debt. And shit like that, man. Tell you what.
Old Joe.
I was seriously, like, unhappy about everything afterwards for, like, most of the day.
But it's a bigger risk if you don't think about those things.
Oh, that's exactly
you
right.
You know, it's fleeting. Sure. It's a fleeting feeling to live for the weekend and live for
I know, but I always think in my head, well, I'm going to make lots of money.
So you should be fine anyway.
It's very optimistic. Yeah, it's optimistic and it's probably wrong.
Should cover my debt. Should be okay.
I'm probably an idiot. I'm probably completely wrong. All right. There's lots of stuff we want to talk about this morning. Lots to get into this fine day, and plenty of stories that I think are in the news that you might want to comment on as well.
Yeah, look, I'm usually so... We get so many press packs here and brands that want to give us stuff, and it's like the weirdest things. Sometimes you'll just get an arbitrary, like, paper holder, and you think, what am I going to do with this exactly? I got a press drop yesterday that ticked three different people who I can gift Christmas presents with.
Oh, whoa. What did you get?
So Joe should be so happy right now.
What did you get?
I got this.
And who was it from? You've got to give them a mention.
Yeah, exactly.
We've done work with them, so it's fine. Virgin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Sir Richard Branson is in the country.
Oh,
so, yeah, he's doing a talk today, so I'm going to that a little later. And they just gave me a welcome to the event package. So they are now my new favorite people. They've partnered up with, like, Barbie to launch this, like, limited edition range of Barbie dolls, and they're all, like, dressed in the Virgin uniforms and whatnot. That is going straight to my niece.
Very good.
So that's the first thing gone.
All right.
Then there was, like, this plush little teddy bear as well. I'm like, that's going to my other niece. That's another person to go off the list. And then there was this, like, eco water bottle. I'm like, yeah, that's probably going to go to someone else, like a cousin or something. So I think wherever we can spare cent and save a dollar, we can be happy.
Very nice.
I know. It's very
You Sia is also, he seems to be the recipient of all of this stuff because he went on a little trip. Ford. Yeah,
what a tough life.
Who was it? This is, what, Adcock Ingram?
Yeah, but, you know, it's flaming Alan Ford.
Yeah, so he has to organize these outrageous events. So what was it exactly? I mean, were you there with a whole bunch of media people?
Yeah, Alan is working with a group of people who want to celebrate bravery in different ways.
Okay.
And so said, in this climate with a lot that's going on, journalists tend to have to be one of the braver ones in society to speak out and do things that other people don't want to do in order to, you know, in order just for the greater good of telling stories. So they took us away for a couple of hours
you spent one night, I think, right?
Yeah, it was just a little over 24 hours.
Where did you go?
To the Pilansberg.
But Pilanesberg?
I have to, yeah, Pilanesberg.
Yes,
I've got to tell you, though, there's enough, like, it's enough to do one night somewhere, right?
True.
Everybody thinks you have to have these long holidays. Mm-mm. You really don't, huh?
Yeah,
and this is also on the topic of Joe Camino, something to think about, because we all think we have to outlay like 10-day holidays and you have to pay for the kids and you have to pay for the friends or whoever else you're doing this for.
And it has to be somewhere far.
Yeah, you don't. You can go away for like a night and it feels like a holiday.
Mm.
Huh. Really? So was it fun? Was it like, it was a game farm?
2 hours out of Joburg.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this very gorgeous and really, really quiet game reserve.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like a couple of chalets and the rest is just all wild and wilderness.
But I think that's the best, huh?
It's actually, you have to deprogram your mind once you're there, because I got uneasy at first with the silence. I'm like,
dude, it's amazing.
Why?
Yeah.
Is it so quiet?
And especially if there's no network, there's no Wi-Fi.
There was Wi-Fi, just no cell phone signal. That's, so I couldn't make amazing. Calls, that's but perfect. I was getting texts every now and then. We went on a game drive early in the evening, and to just be in the middle of this vast land, no city lights, no, even just a faint hooter in the background.
You didn't have any of that.
Nothing.
You're far enough away.
And there was a point I was so grateful. Our game ranger actually stopped the car and we sat in the darkness and the quiet. Do you know, when last were you in such silence where you could hear your own breathing?
Mm-hmm.
In my bed.
No, but Google, there's always noise.
You take it for granted. I mean, there's always something going on.
You know, there's a room at the SABC. It's called an anechoic chamber.
Okay.
It is completely damped for sound. So, in other words, no sound escapes and no sound is reflected.
Oof. It mind fucks you, huh?
When you talk, it stops like just... But if you hold your hand out directly in front of your mouth, the words and the sound stops right there. Sure. You don't hear anything else, and that's where it is. They say the silence is deafening. You actually get a bit freaked out. If you stay in there for longer than half an hour, 40 minutes or so, you start to go a little bit crazy because you don't hear anything. And we're so used to, like, your eyes you can close at night when you sleep. Your ears continue to hear. What wakes you up at night? Sounds, right?
Mm.
If you think about that, your alarm clock is a sound that wakes you up in the morning. It's not a... You don't start to suddenly get blasted with like LED lights in order to wake up in the morning. And you don't smell something that wakes you up, or taste something, or feel something. It's all sound. So your sound never switches off.
Sure.
And if you think about that, as human beings, we're not used to it. We're not used to being quiet. Yeah. And we used to be, in the old days, when we were wandering around on our own, or there was just a campfire, and, you know, there were maybe the sounds of animals. But we now have so much noise pollution around us the whole time that it's kind of freaky when you're out in the game reserve, or out in the bush, or you're just chilling on some farm in the middle of nowhere. And it's so beautiful in some ways. And you see the stars, so many stars.
Mm.
It's magic. You need to do that. Mm. You need to connect.
Yeah. The game there was just incredible to be out there. Look, I was hoping to see... All of the big five was there.
Really?
Yeah.
Sure, you did that in one day.
A leopard and a rhino.
Yeah. Amazing. I was hoping to see some sort of like a lion kill, but we didn't get to see that. It's sad that we've reached a state, though, when it comes to rhinos, where we were distinctly warned not to take any footage at all of the rhinos.
Mm-hmm.
We could go around
and stuff.
Yeah, we could take photos of any other animals, but because of how bad rhino poaching is, we couldn't even take anything of the rhinos there. But the real winner, and game was amazing, the lodge was incredible, the real winner was Derek Watts from Carte Blanche, was part of the group.
Oh, yeah?
It is.
He was
a hoot of notes. It's quite an interesting contradiction to see like these uptight, very serious people on screen when they have to deliver these stories. But off screen, they are so much fun because it's just like Devi. Devi is just...
Oh, she was there too?
No. But, you know, just in social circles, if you get to hang out with her, she is just a joke a minute. And she's also very crass and crude, which you'd never expect. But Derek was there with his wife and, you know, they were just like the ultimate dinner party guests to sit and to be able to pick his brain. Like, I mean, the dude is wanted in Zimbabwe. He cannot go to Zimbabwe.
Wanted for what?
Because of some of the things, some of the stories that he's broken. Like, he's exposed, like, their tobacco industry and how sordid it is. Like, he cannot go to Zimbabwe.
If he goes there, he'll disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And there he is telling the story in, like, board shorts and flip-flops on the other side of the table. I'm like... Tell us more. So yeah, it was just a little over 24 hours, but it was more than what I needed because it was good. It was really, really fun.
Dude, speaking of, like, just to go back on the rhino thing, I was watching a documentary the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously rhino poaching's like really taking away our rhino and they're going extinct. But there's this dude who's got a rhino farm.
Oh yeah?
He's got like 1,500 rhino on his farm. And what he's fighting for is to commercialize the selling of rhino horn so that you don't get these mother truckers who come in here, shoot a rhino and kill it for its horn. You know what I mean? You farm the thing, you harvest the horn, and you sell it.
Yeah. So it's almost like a resource. It's like, you know, you farm with beef or with lamb or whatever. And, you know, we have no ethical problem with that.
I've never thought of it like that, actually.
They were fighting him. The government is fighting
him. Everyone's fighting him. You see, here's the problem. It's like everybody is so self-righteous. And this world is driving me crazy.
It's crazy.
Because you turn on your phone in the morning or you switch on the TV. You listen to stupid radio, if anyone still does that. All you hear is this bunch of people who are trying to show you that they're good people. And they're not good people. They're doing nothing. They're achieving nothing. They sit in social media and they make a big noise about everybody else being bad. They tell everybody else how to save the planet and they're doing nothing themselves to save the planet. It's this idea that you are a good person if you just show up other people for being bad.
Dude.
It's weird, right? And so you'll find some guy who's saving a bunch of rhino by breeding them in order for their horns to be cut off. He doesn't kill the animal.
Exactly.
But he wants to sell the poachers. Instead, what we've got is like regulation and government stepping in and people who actually don't understand how anything in the world of conservation works, all trying to tell everybody. And
it is not legal.
Members of the public then get involved and like, you're killing our rhinos.
Dude,
you're like,
should
no,
see
you
this
don't know anything. What's it called? Because that's something I want to check.
On Netflix.
Oh, I'm so sick of it. Hey, someone's giving me shit here.
Oh,
what are they saying?
Garrett's going all philosophical about sound. I'm taking notes. That is on. Thank you, Mfundo. You know sound is our medium, right? So I care about it. And in the beginning, there was the?
Word.
And the word was God. So don't ever forget that sound is the most important. He spoke the world. Now, whether you're religious or not, this is some of the oldest human writing that there is.
Can you say this in Pastor Manning's voice?
In the beginning there was the word! No, but just seriously for a second. If you want to, you know, if you care at all about history and context and the human story, you don't have to be a believer. And many people will know I'm not in that category. But you've got to appreciate that this stuff is there for us to absorb. It is our history. It is part of our origin. It is the story of humanity.
And take what you will from it.
Absolutely. And it's the foundation of all the good things that have happened to us as a result of Western civilization. Individual sovereignty, liberty, freedom, democracy, human rights. All of this comes from this stem of Judeo-Christian heritage. All right? So let's go all the way back to the beginning. And in the beginning, God speaks the word into the world into existence. He doesn't make it with a sweeping gesture of his hands.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't make it by looking. He doesn't make it by smelling or by tasting. You see, sound is a spectacularly important element of the human condition. And people underestimate it at their peril. Just because you can listen to things while you're doing other things doesn't mean that sound isn't the most important of all the senses. And also remember that sound is the only thing humans can do to create a wave.
What do you mean?
Well, if you go into particle physics, now we're getting seriously deep into the reeds.
Okay, tread lightly and slowly.
The biggest debate in science at the moment, I promise I won't stay on this for long because I can just tell people are like, oh, Jesus, uh-oh, here he goes. All right. The biggest debate in particle physics at the moment, or in any kind of theoretical physics, is are things particles or are they waves?
Mm-hmm.
Because, for example, light can be measured. There's a wavelength to all the different colors of light. There's a wavelength to microwaves, to sound waves. You're listening to us now on the internet. That's coming from a digital device that's generating waves.
Is that like refraction and reflection?
Well, no, no.
I mean, I'm keeping quiet.
So the entire experience of sight is also a wave experience, but you can't generate waves for sight. I can't make, you know, I'm incapable of producing light, for example, as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
We have to make a fire or create electricity or whatever to make waves of a visual in the visual spectrum, but we can create auditory waves. We can make sounds with our mouths and with our hands and so on that can generate sound waves. Waves are a massively important part of the experience of the real world, the universe. It goes all the way from the very slowest waves of the biggest amplitude, which you can use to, I suppose, right at that end, you've got, what is it again? You've got like low vibrations at an atomic level. And then all the way at the other end where you've got light, which is just, you know, it's the fastest wave of all. And some people say light isn't just a wave. It's also particles called photons. So the debate, the debate is really about, are things like light composed only of particles or are they composed only of waves? And here's the big deal. Sound is something that humans are able to generate. It's the only wave we can make. So if you're making waves, you know when people say you're making waves, changing the world, everything has a frequency. A solid object is still moving at an atomic level. Those atoms are vibrating. There are electrons going around the nucleus of those atoms at a particular frequency and at a particular amplitude, which is why we can never find the electron and pinpoint it in any one given place, because by the time you try to observe it, it's moved. And the reason it's doing that is because it's following a frequency and a pattern of amplitude. So everything can be broken down into waves and perhaps into particles, and this is the big debate that's going on. However, to go back to the point, sound cannot be underestimated. Sound is something you can produce, and it's something you can consume. And that is not true for any of the other senses. I think that's beautiful.
Wow.
And when we do this ridiculous show every day, we're participating in creation. And our audience are participating in creation with us. So it is part of what happened at the very beginning of time. The Word.
I believe that's
no small thing. Are you with me?
I'm with you, dude. You've taken it to
a little religiosity for you this morning.
A whole different level over here. Can't believe you're a lawyer by profession.
Morning, guys. Here's something to bring us back to reality. Morning, guys. From Brendan. Do you know if the Springboks Trophy Tour will be on TV for those of us that have to work? I don't know. There's probably going to be highlights, so you probably see it on the news.
Oh, did you hear about, you know, South Africa? Oh,
hey, guys, did you see that we won the Rugby World Cup?
Isn't no, that who's fantastic? That now?
That's from Carl.
With the Springbok Trophy Tour, did you hear how there were all of these massive incidences of crime at the airport?
No. There were a lot of people at the airport.
When the box came home and landed at the airport, and there were crowds of people there to welcome them, put one and one together, and you get things like phones stolen.
Sure.
Come on now.
Opportunistic.
So who knows what's going to happen? I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but who knows what's going to happen as, you know, there's so many of these events around the country as they continue with this trophy tour.
My God, we're such a bunch of shits if all we can do is see an opportunity to rob.
Right.
Dude, wherever two or three are gathered, there's a criminal.
What a pathetic bunch of people must be doing this.
I just heard of the person who, I can't remember which publication it was, but anyway, they were talking to the press around how bad the crime was at the airport. And this person said they rushed to the police to report that their phone had been stolen. And the police were like, sorry, we'd like to help you, but please wait in line. You're like the 40th person who's here to report an incident. This is the airport alone.
Okay. Good Lord.
Like,
wow.
Where are these people waiting like for opportunities like this at the airport? How do you... You know, like, scheme that up.
Like the Global Citizen bunch who just see an opportunity.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was wild.
Anyway. Yikes.
Anyway. All right. What else is going on? What else do we need to get stuck into today? Because now you've got me off on this tangent about sound. So tangent, who the hell knows what? Shit. I mean, we might go in any direction now.
Well, I'm just glad. I'm a little relieved. This is like a family thing, but... A cousin of mine is engaged is going to actually welcome a baby soon. So they've just gone past the 3-month mark.
Yeah.
And this is now when they're starting to tell people. But, you know, it's weird. So he wanted to confide in me from the get-go. So he told me like 2 weeks into finding out that they're pregnant that they have a baby coming. No, it's not nice when someone trusts you with something like that.
Well, can't you shut up about
no.
it?
Yeah, exactly.
That's all you have to... All you have to do... You don't have to do anything serious.
No.
You're not having the baby. You just have to shut your goddamn mouth. Can you not
I don't like it. I've had the toughest time. It was like past 3 months having to keep quiet about something like this. And now I see why he told me. He told me because he needed someone else apart from his fiancé to confide in.
Right.
So I was the one who was telling about doctor's appointments and was a point where his fiance had to be hospitalized and they couldn't tell everyone else what it was about.
It's nice that he wants you around. Like,
I don't
he trusts
think it's
you.
Noble.
No, I think it's cool.
Note to self, no one tell me anything anymore because I don't have to.
You just can't shut up about it, right?
I can, but I just don't like to.
Well, you've got to get better about that. Okay, let's get into a couple of things in the news since it is 6:30. First things first. A bill that will compel political parties to keep records of their private funders and make them available to the voting public has been passed in the National Assembly. So, why is this important?
Mm-hmm.
Political parties get their funding from?
Everywhere.
Randomly.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Right? And this is scary because what if your political party that you're voting for is funded by some terrorist organization? Or let's say they're funded by some shadowy... Illuminati type organization somewhere in the Western world, or it's some douchebag industrialist here in South Africa who wants to increase their proximity to government so they can get mining rights, or you never know, right? These are called lobbying organizations, but lobbying is just a sanitized term for people who are bribing government so they can get what they want, or forcing government by pressuring them in other ways to do what they want. I'd like to know who's paying our politicians.
I think this will, the transparency will only be good.
So, of course, this is good. Anything over 100,000 rand now, for a period of 5 years, we will have to keep records of, and people will have to disclose who those donors are over 100,000 rand. So if you are a big mining magnet, or you're somebody who wants to have the regulations in your industry softened for you, and you go and give... 18 million rand to the ANC, and the ANC then behind the scenes goes, sure, no problem, because we'll do anything for money. We've proven that with the Guptas.
Dude.
Let's change the regulation to help this person. Now we'll know who they're being funded by. So all the political parties will have to disclose who their funders who are paying them more than 100,000 rand are. I think that's very good, and well done to the lobby group My Vote Counts and their campaign. These are guys who actually care about constitutional democracy and who are interested in transparency. And by the way, before you start thinking, well, this is just going to reveal the ANC's funders, it'll also reveal who the funders are of the other parties. And their biggest complaint up to now has been, we don't want people to know who our funders are because they will be victimized.
Victimized by who?
Well, you think about it this way. If the ANC find out that, let's say, X Bank is giving... the DA money.
Yeah.
Guess what the ANC is going to do?
Nyamf, nyamf, nyamf. X Bank.
Correct. They're going to start becoming a bit iffy about it. I think the more that we know about this stuff, the better.
Yeah.
Always prefer transparency to people hiding in the shadows. And these lobbyists and these funders can now come out into the light and we can see who they are. In Cape Town, correctional services have said they have faith that religion could help free up prisons, and this is the message behind a spiritual care expo being held at Polsmore Prison over the next 3 days. It's being attended by correctional services officials and organizations geared towards the rehabilitation and reintegration of offenders. Now, who could have a problem with that? Who could have a problem with that? If these religious organizations are worth anything at all, then the very best work they can do is to go into prisons and try to help prisoners to become better people, try to help them get over their ugliness of their past, and try to make them productive and positive and useful citizens. The one place in the whole world that I think we probably could do with volunteer religion is in prisons. And I would have no problem with any of that. Whether you are going into prisons and your ultimate goal is to convert people to Christianity or Islam, none of my business. Make these people good people. Help them find a purpose in their life. Help them pull themselves out of misery and out of antisocial behavior. And you've got a friend in me.
It's funny, but some of my earliest childhood memories, now that I think back on it, are calls from prison that we'd get for my father, because my father has done...
He's a pastor, right?
Yeah, yeah, he's a pastor, but he's also done some counseling courses in order to conduct sessions with inmates. And so he used to do regular prison visits to the point where he'd established a rapport in this relationship with some of the inmates, and they'd confide in him and they'd call him for advice. So I would be like... 8 years
old. You'd be speaking to prisoners.
8 years old, and the house phone would ring. I'd pick it up, and it's like, hey, can I speak to you? Sorry, I don't know why I have to change my voice as well. Why do you have to change your voice? Because there's no voice for an inmate, okay? They're people like us. But anyway, sometimes like when he's... Sometimes when he's not in the house, and I would know these people by name. Like, I remember Joe growing up, and...
So you know some prisoners,
like,
boy.
I would chat to Joe. It's like, hey, hey. And then Joe ended up being released when I was probably, 10 or 11 years old. And he came to visit us. And it was, it was just another day at the
was
office.
Like, Jesus.
All reformed and stuff.
So, yeah, if this is the emphasis of rehab in our prison system, then let it be.
All right, here's a story that you should be worried about. Two former employees of Twitter have been charged in the U.S. with spying for Saudi Arabia. The charges unsealed on Wednesday in San Francisco alleged the Saudi agents sought personal information about Twitter users, including known critics of the Saudi government. Ay, ay, ay. See, this is the ugly side of all these social media platforms. Once you're on there, they have your contact details. You know that, right? And once they've got your cell phone number, they can track you through GPS. So let's say you've been criticizing the Saudi government for the last 5 years, and they've just never been able to find you because maybe you live in, I don't know, Denmark. Then suddenly, they have two guys who've infiltrated Twitter, and they are working alongside Jack Dorsey to supposedly let people just share information. And then these guys get in there, and they check out what's going on the platform, and they find out what your number is because they can now get into the server, and then they hand that to the Saudi government, and guess what? Suddenly you end up dead on the pavement in Denmark somewhere.
Sure.
It's very scary. Court documents named the two as Ahmad Abuamo, who's a U.S. citizen, and an Ali Azarbaya, who's from Saudi Arabia. Third person is also accused of spying. The charges... allege that they acted as intermediaries between the two Twitter employees and Saudi officials. So just disgusting behavior from a disgusting regime in Saudi Arabia. And then I cannot emphasize enough how idiotic eyewitness news are. I had a rant the other day about them. Well, I spoke the other day about how stupid and spineless and without any principle those people at EWN are when it comes to things like Barry Bateman. But I have to say, they also can't even do the news properly. Because here's the headline. They say, convicted racist Vicky Momberg hands herself over to the police. Now, there is no crime called racism. You understand that racism is an opinion, right? You do understand that. There is such a thing as hate speech, which is very narrowly defined, in which case you are convicted of hate speech. You're not convicted of racism. Someone needs to sit down with, who's this journalist? I'm going to read their name out because they're an idiot and they need to be disciplined.
Well, I've seen that all over, though.
Edwin Nshidi, you need to figure out how the law works, my friend. Sure. Convicted racist Vicky Momberg has been rearrested on Wednesday. Well, listen, good news that they found her because, you know, we didn't want her hanging out with
black
people in Transkei.
She handed herself over. In.
Yeah, but she's probably really listening to us. We were really hoping that she was living with black people in the rural Transkei and that would be her, in a way, her way of reorienting herself.
And socially. Her name was now Liletu.
Exactly. Wouldn't that be fun? However, I do have to say, if you don't understand that you cannot say someone is convicted of racism, and please, let's be very clear about this, ugly and distasteful and socially ill as a racist may be, they are not a criminal for their opinions. And the moment anyone tells you that you can be locked up for your opinions, please get away from that person immediately. They are a danger to society. They are thought police. They are trying to control your mind, and they are trying to decide for you what is and isn't acceptable in terms of your expression, which should be as free as possible. There is no such thing. And that means even if you are the kind of person who, like 99.9% of people in South Africa, thinks racism is revolting, that you still allow someone to have their opinions, even if their opinions are revolting. Because guess what? They're not going to change their opinions just because you say you're not allowed to have that opinion. In fact, what it'll do is harden them more. This kind of thing, when you say convicted racist, what it does is it drives racism underground. And those people become much more dangerous because then they realize they have an enemy to mobilize against. And that is precisely where things that otherwise would be on the extreme edges of society, where all of us.
It serves as a lesson, though. Like,
what do you mean?
This is what happens to you.
No.
If you are this kind of person.
No, all that people do is they quiet down their language. Instead of being obvious racists, which we can all oppose and say, you know what, that's not acceptable behavior. I mean, if you've got a friend at a party and they say something that you find really distasteful, you say to them, hey, you know what, that's not cool. That has more effect than if you have a law that makes it impossible for someone to say something and they then say it in quiet places. And it becomes illegal to do it. So it's suddenly something which needs organization and special meeting places. And it goes underground and it becomes uncontrollable. If you want to do this, and this is how you think that you can police people's thoughts, you're in for a very ugly awakening. Because those people become much more powerful when they aren't just allowed to be idiots in society. Being an idiot in society is its own medicine. You sort it out.
I'll just catch you.
I got to say, again, EWN, you are embarrassing to the news profession. And then China fears young people are addicted to video games, and they're now imposing a curfew. They've announced a curfew on online gaming for minors among new measures curbed at aim. Again, this is China trying to get parents to do their job.
Mm.
Whose job is it to make sure that kids don't spend too much time online? Is government's job? Is it? Is there any government in the world that can do a better job than a parent? Any government. And if you say yes, you must be a terrible parent or you were raised by terrible parents. If
you imagine, where you just want.
If you imagine the government stepping in is a better plan. I mean, really, Jesus Christ. So the Chinese government are now going to get involved. They're going to say there's a curfew on online gaming for minors. Who knows how they're going to police this?
Yeah, how do you police that?
Apparently, under the rules, gamers aged under 18 will be banned from playing online games between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. on weekdays. They can only play for 90 minutes.
Yeah. 9-0.
Now, just think about what is wrong with society, where the people who make laws, the politicians, are going to tell children when they can play. There's something sick about that. Who would choose this for themselves? What parent would abdicate this responsibility to the state so that the state can get involved in how they parent their children? How out of control are you as a parent when you admit this is the only way to deal with things? Sweet Lord, Gareth, this is a disaster.
We can't give hidings anymore over here.
Yeah, but that's a whole separate issue. I mean, really, Gugu, you know, there are different philosophies on how you should discipline your kids. Some parents...
Yeah, but allow me to choose how I want to discipline my kids.
I'm on your side. Like, I don't think that it should be okay for you to assault any human being, right?
Right.
And that assault is something that should be taken seriously. And if you don't know what the line is, like some parents give their kids a smack on the bum when they misbehave. Some parents beat their children.
So opposed parents should be arrested.
Till they bleed.
Yeah.
But that's the point. So how do you manage that situation? It's a very gray area, right? And I agree with you. You sound like one of these hardcore conservatives who's like, I'll discipline my children. Maybe that's the way you were raised, and that's fine. Maybe
that's hiding.
Maybe that's why you turned out all right. And maybe that's why Sia and I did. But you can't let government make all the decisions, and you also can't let parents be completely a law unto themselves. Like, you know, there are people who have babies in this country, and those babies are put in a plastic bag and thrown in a river. Those are not responsible parents. So, again, you can't give the parents every part of the decision. You can't give government every part of the decision. The reason we have governments is so that they can make rules that make it habitable in society for good law-abiding people. The bad people will continue to be bad people. There's nothing you can do about them in the sense that you're going to change them. The same is true for racists. You're not going to change them. What you've got to do is create a society where that kind of behavior is discouraged and where those kind of people are pushed to the edges, where they will either self-medicate by improving as people, or they'll be locked in jail. Or if they, in the case of free speech, won't be locked in jail, they'll be allowed to say dumb things until no one wants anything to do with them anymore. It's its own medicine. Seriously. So good luck, China, in getting kids to play video games less. How embarrassing that that's what it's come to. And China, one of the more disciplined countries in the world, you would think. All right. What else do you want to talk about? Because we've got a couple of messages here.
What are they saying, Gareth?
This is interesting. This comes from Kucho, who says, I think you've misread the headline, Gareth. What they mean is she's convicted of hate speech and being a racist. Convicted a racist, at least that's how I read it. Well, no, it says convicted racist.
It's just easy to say that.
It's just lazy. It's lazy journalism. So I'm afraid I'm going to nitpick
it. So it is convicted racist?
Yeah. Now, you can be a convicted rapist. You can be a convicted murderer. You can be a convicted pedophile. You can be a convicted fraudster.
Yeah.
But you cannot be a convicted racist. Racism isn't a crime.
Well, she was convicted of crime in injuria.
Right, which is that's a common law.
Which is also a very vague charge.
Precisely. And frankly, there are a lot of lawyers who will tell you that actually that judge erred in that finding because it's very hard. Crimen injuria is a very specific category.
Oh, did I mispronounce it? Sorry.
Well, crimen injuria. Okay. We don't speak Latin anymore, do we? So there's no
Incepto ned system.
There's no Latin person who's going to run around telling you pronounced that incorrectly. I mean, we can't even decide how to pronounce things in English sometimes. So
schedule. Yes.
Yeah.
But USA.
No. So my point is just it's lazy journalism and it's poor journalism. You don't understand how the law works and you don't know what you're saying here. I know a lot of people would like it to be a crime. The moment you live in a country where people are policing your thoughts and certain thoughts are criminal, you're living in a totalitarian state. And you want to know about that? Ask Alexander Solzhenitsyn in a brilliant book called The Gulag Archipelago. And if you read that book, you'll understand why it's so important for us to care about free speech and for us to let terrible people say terrible things so we know what we're dealing with.
Look, bar the great time that it was away, but, you know, it was great to get this behind-the-scenes look of what happens in the broadcasting and news world, because what we do here is very different to traditional media. And yes, Derek Watts was there, but there were some people from ENCA. There was actually a team from EWN who was part of the group as well. And journalists in this country, man, get put through a lot.
In what sense?
So, just on the note of headlines, we had this discussion of sometimes where do you draw the line between being enticing and just being tacky and clickbaity. and not to pass the buck, but a lot of the journalists that were there were like, well, you know, we go, we cover the story, then we come back, and our editors are the ones who are pushing for these headlines that will just sell tickets or that will just get people talking. One of the journalists there covered the whole Bishop's saga, the water polo coach thing and whatnot, and she said that she was so disheartened when she went back to the office and her team said, no, you have to rewrite all of this and focus on the fact that this teacher is Nick Mallett's niece. Sure. And it's like, what does that have to do with the story? Where does Nick Mallett come into all of this? She did what she did on her own accord. You know, Nick is not involved in any of this. We spoke about things like that. They also just discussed the general toughness of working in South Africa, which is you're dealing with so much trauma and tragedy, and how they don't really have a lot of time and space and resources to process all of this. One of the ladies who works for ENCA now was recounting how last year, over the festive season, which tends to also be a slow news time when you think about it, businesses are shut down, there's not really much happening in Parliament, and so she was sitting in the newsroom, and she got so excited, finally, it sounds so eerie, that there was an accident that happened that she could report on.
Oh, Jesus.
So she was so happy, she's like, okay, there we go, we have a headline, and she was covering it, and was all good and well, and was this accident in the Eastern Cape. She submitted that, she was on her way home, and she got a call from her relative saying, look, where are you? Are you okay?
She says,
I just got done at work. Mm. And they said, yeah, our neighbor just passed away, and this is a neighbor who she...
In that accident?
Yeah, in the exact accident that she was so happy to cover.
I would love to say I feel sympathy, but actually journalism's a pretty easy job, really, and I don't feel sorry for them.
Look,
you're opting into that
mining a tough day at the office.
There are people have to go down a tunnel for a kilometer every day, and then get there and have to hack at a piece of rock all day. In Aaron.
But Gareth,
please.
When you're assigned to, for example, cover Marikana.
Yes, sure.
You know,
it's hard.
It is tough.
But you can always say no, and you can always quit journalism and go and work in an auditing firm or something. But of course, most journalists don't have a qualification for that, so they're journalists. I don't have a whole lot of sympathy. Sorry, I don't care. Like, don't whine to me about how hard it is to be a journalist or a teacher or any of these things. It isn't. There are much harder jobs than that. I don't complain about this one often enough because, really, I've got nothing to complain about compared to some people.
I disagree.
You think it's hard?
You have to look at things in context. But it's just like dismissing anyone in 2019 who has any sort of complaint and say, yes, it is the greatest time to live and be alive.
Sure.
But it doesn't mean you can't complain, or it doesn't mean you can't struggle.
Gareth.
You're allowed to complain, but I'm allowed to tell you you're stupid for complaining. And you just have to tolerate that just as much as I have to tolerate your complaint.
Okay, yes. Sure.
And you know what? That little bit of gratitude would go a long way, journalists.
Sitting
in a... Most of these people are not on-the-spot reporters either. They're sitting in a newsroom typing up stories. Don't give me that. I've seen how a newsroom works.
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, such trauma and blood and sweat and tears.
I think it is.
Some of them, sure. Some of them put up with some seriously ugly stories, have to deal with a lot of difficulty, but most of them, absolutely fine. That's why they became journalists.
Yeah. Look, there was another lady who covered Life Estimeni. And she says it's all good and well that we've moved past it, but she still has some of the family members of these patients calling her. And she's like, well, my editors don't really care. And it's not that they don't care, but we have to move on, you know?
The next news cycle.
The world moves on, but we're still stuck here. So, it's weighing things like that up.
All right. Very good. We got to get to some other stories in the news. We've got the burning platform coming up a little bit later on. It's going to be a busy morning on cliffcentral.com. I did get an interesting email from Chris, who emailed us from the Arctic.
Chris want?
He said,
"How can you change your tone? Chris is just sending a email."
He said, "I was fortunate enough to be sent on a work trip to the remote island of Jan Mayen, which is in the Greenland Sea. It is a tiny volcanic island with only 18 inhabitants on a weather station.
One eight.
Mm-hmm. And to date, only two South Africans have ever set foot there.
Hmm.
The only way on or off the island is by private boat or military plane. So it's this really funny little isolated island. My mom sent me Dion Meyer's book Fever, which I took with me to Jan Mayen, the island. Despite not knowing much about Dion's prior works, this post-apocalyptic story was so compelling I couldn't put the book down. Remember, we spoke to Emmanuel Castis just earlier this week about his role in the new show Trackers, which is Dion Meyer. He wrote that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dion Meyer is also coming to join us next Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to hear from him. The man himself, that's very exciting, is coming up next week. Instead of keeping the book when I finished it, says Chris from the Arctic, I decided to leave it at the station's library. That way, if the world ever does face an apocalypse, at least one copy of the book will stay relatively out of harm's way. In the meantime, I hope others get to enjoy the story too. I love the way this guy thinks. Like, he's thinking, if the world goes to absolute shit, this little island's probably going to be fine, and there'll be one...
Well, with 18 people.
Right.
Yes.
Superb. Fun fact for you and Anthony Medera. During World War II, Jan Mayen was the only part of Norway that was not occupied by the Nazis, despite numerous attempts. The famous Norwegian poet Nordahl Grieg even wrote a poem about it before he died in a bombing mission to Berlin. And then he writes it in Nordic, which I obviously can't speak. But here's the poem. It goes, "Dark stands an island in the sea, lonely, cold, and bare. This is Norway's land. This is all we have."
Hmm.
And that's, 70 years ago that happened? That Norway was occupied by the Nazis? People forget this stuff so quickly. And we are coming up to Armistice Day on Monday, the 11th of the 11th, where we try to commemorate World War I. Many of us might not be here, and if we were here, we'd be speaking German. If World War I had gone a different way. Loving Blind History Season 2, perhaps a future season, could include historic places and events that left its mark on the world. Well, we've got Season 3 on the table. We're busy talking about what that might include. And if you do have suggestions, you can always email us, gareth@cliffcentral.com. So thank you, Chris from the Arctic, for that very cool email.
Look, talking about this tiny island just reminds me of what I heard Lithuania is doing.
Oh, yeah?
To boost their tourism, because there's this random, the capital of Lithuania is this random town called Vilnius, and they don't really get a lot of people traveling there, so they tried this daring ad campaign.
Isn't Vilnius the capital of Lithuania? I think it is.
Yes.
Hmm.
Gareth, that's what I said.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm kind of processing it.
I thought, am I having a stroke here? Yeah. Did I just not? Is that not weird?
Wait, what campaign? What campaign are they doing?
So this is their ad campaign that they used, which at first the mayor disapproved of, and people just were up in arms about it. But I love it. I think it's so smart. They're calling it the G-spot of Europe.
Oh.
They're encouraging visitors to come and visit Vilnius and saying, nobody knows where it is, but when you find it, it's amazing.
Oh, that's
and, nice. And the whole ad campaign has like photos of like a woman in, and she has
grabbing
like
the
this,
sheets.
Yeah, she has like this facial expression of like
orgasm.
Enjoying herself. Yeah. And she's holding on to sheets that also happen to be the world map. And now it's actually worked out whether whether it's because of this marketing campaign or not. But tourism has gone up by 12.7%. I say it's a success.
Very well done. Well, at least they're thinking out of the box, as ad agencies always try to do. And these guys are getting it right. So well done to the Lithuanians on this front. All right, Canton Pille is here. He's made his way into the studio. It's nice to see you.
Spot. Surely it's in the box.
That's all we need. Patriarchal humor from you first thing in the morning. How dare you, member of the privileged class.
Like, I was trying not to go down that road with all of these innuendos that I could also point out, but I'll keep quiet.
I thought I was being pretty direct this year. Yeah. No innuendo whatsoever.
Yeah. Sven says, Vilnius is the capital. You know, Sven, that's what I said to Sia. And then he says, a very beautiful city, but you must go to the old city, which is apparently amazing. So there's some useful info from Sven. You've been to Vilnius?
Mm.
In Lithuania?
I have not been to Vilnius in Lithuania. No, I have been to Slovenia, though.
Oh.
Yeah, Ljubljana. It's a beautiful place.
Hmm.
Of course, you know, Slovenia is famous for generating more first ladies of the United States than any other country of Europe.
Oh. All right, when we come back, we will check in with Canthan and find out what's going on in the Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's. CliffCentral.com. Good morning.
CliffCentral.com.